my family is a typical example. My grandfather was one of 10. My dad was one of 4. Mm. He then produced 2. Yeah. I've had 1. And my son's had none. I feel like the song Toast by the Street Band. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Just a little bit of toast.
Toast.
Why can't the local people own the steelworks and they can borrow money on the open market as well? And when the good times are there, they get the returns of a profit.
And this one says, Clive, I've just tuned in to LBC here in Berlin to hear your caller talking about living here and about one of my favourite books.
Well, I'm recovered and I'm just enjoying life again.
And welcome to part 2 of my Nocturnal Emissions podcast, coming to you today linked from the Baltic Market in Liverpool. And if you haven't heard the first part of this, well, the second part won't make too much sense, I suggest. You find the first one, have a listen to that, and come back and listen to this second part, in which we play with my good friend Keith,
beautifully edited
Clive
it.
Bill Phone-In Jukebox.
So as we've heard, Clive Ball has got a great reputation for being a phone-in host. I think he's excellent because he's not trivial, but he's not too pompous either, and he gets the best out of his callers. And I've been on a number of occasions overnight. So let's have a look now. I've listed them all. We've got the jukebox here of my calls. So you're looking at it upside down, Keith. Can you read that? So you're going to choose them in order that you want to hear these calls to Clive Bull's show. And so give us the number on the jukebox. And then the subject matter, if you can read my writing.
Right, so I would say the first one is B4,
yes.
Bravo 4, which was immigration.
Oh, very controversial one. Immigration, that was just a week or two back. Okay.
Clive Bull on LBC. Listen on your smart speaker. Just say, play LBC.
Talking about Keir Starmer, can he reverse his fortunes? Also parking, the threat of parking fines going up 75%. Is that reasonable? Raising money for local authorities. And moths infestations as well. What can be done? Have you had that experience? How bad can it get? 0345 6060973. Richard in St. Helens. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Clive.
Hi, morning.
Nothing to contribute about mirths, I'm afraid. Remember Inspector Clouseau?
Mirths. Yes.
No, I want to talk about immigration and Keir Starmer.
Right.
I think Labour has suffered from the fact that it hasn't accepted that there has ever been a problem with some immigrants who haven't integrated and haven't learnt the language. Mm-hmm. But I take a lot of taxi drivers at the moment because I'm not allowed to drive. And in St. Helens, you're lucky if you see a non-white face all day. You can look hard and low for them. There's no problem with immigration in St. Helens. We need more immigrants for the care home system and so on. But the taxi drivers are one of the few areas where there is an international feel to them. I had a very interesting I have very interesting conversations with them all, but I had a very interesting conversation with one the other day who coming back from Liverpool. It was about a 30-35 minute drive, a Pakistani gentleman, and he said he knows there are some immigrants, an Indian and Pakistani, who have been here 50 years and won't speak a word of English.
Mm-hmm.
And to Labour to say that there's not a problem with this, and there's not a problem with integration, particularly with women being allowed to go out freely and so forth without a male chaperone and not be able to have their own lives and general liberation has alienated a lot of people. And then the same thing with patriotism, that to say you're patriotic and you believe in Britain and in British exceptionalism, and I'm a patriot, but I'm also an internationalist. I don't know why we can't be like, say, Norway or the Scandinavian countries, where they're both very patriotic and very proud of their culture and their family life and so on, and yet they're also internationalists. Why can't we be like that?
Well, absolutely. In some ways we are. But what Keir Starmer seems to be doing at the moment is trying to mimic reform policies and talk tough because he thinks that's what people want to hear. I'm not sure it is, and he seems to be losing more support than ever. I mean, what did you make of him talking about, you know, a squalid experiment in migration and an island of strangers?
Well, I don't feel that at all. I mean, I've never been, but I'm also respectful of a point of view of people feeling threatened. I've never been in a situation where my work's been undercut by new immigrants and so forth. Or felt threatened in any way. To me, it's been a welcome international flavour to the community. Mm. I wish we had some immigrants where I live. I live in a village of some 300 souls, and I saw one black face about 10 years ago. I think one of the single women had a black boyfriend.
Right. But it's not just about race or colour. It's also just about big movements of people. And there are parts of the country, and it's reasonable to recognise it, isn't it, where a neighbourhood has completely changed.
Yes.
Because of a large amount of migration. And you might like it, some people welcome it, and other people do feel, I suppose, what he's getting at with his remarks is that they don't sort of recognise where they once lived. It's a different place. I guess that's what he's trying to tap into. But I don't know how that fits in with you know, migration policy particularly.
Well, it just needs a more sophisticated approach to recognise that there is a problem with some communities in some parts of the country and do a lot. And there is a lot going on to try to integrate people and bring them together. In gyms in particular, I saw a programme the other day where it was a Sikh gentleman in Walsall in the West Midlands, very similar town to St Helens in many ways, you know, had a lot of heavy industry and so forth. And there were internationals, there were African Caribbeans, there were Muslims, there were Sikhs, there were all sorts. And they're all getting on extremely well together. And also the girls, the Sikhs are very equality-wise with women.
But do you think it actually matters? I mean, if you don't speak very good English, for example, you stick with people who you know and you don't mix very much, does that actually matter?
I mean, I think it does matter, yes. I think it does matter.
Why?
Because people want to feel that they can go anywhere and be amongst friends and have something in common with the people who they're
with. It doesn't mean somebody's a danger because they don't speak English so well. I mean, if you look at how the English enclaves in somewhere like Spain, for example, that's exactly what we do. We don't mix very well, and we don't speak Spanish. We never bother. We're probably the worst in the world for that.
I agree with you.
So, but you know, I don't think that's the end of the world. Just that you know, you've got a different culture and you haven't learnt the language. Well, it might not be desirable, but it's. I don't think that is the number one problem that we have to deal with at the moment. And as I say, I think we're just as bad as some others. But I'm not even sure that's what Keir Starmer was getting at. He seemed to be more concerned about overall net migration, about numbers. And, I mean, there again, we've got a problem. Because on the one hand, you need workers. As you said, you could do with people where you are. On the other hand, we've got an ever-increasing population who we haven't provided facilities for and houses and hospital beds for. So what do we do about that?
We need more people because we're not replacing ourselves. I mean, my family is a typical example. My grandfather was one of 10. My dad was one of 4. Mm. He then produced 2. Yeah. I've had one, and my son's had none.
Yeah. Well, you're right, yes. Yeah, I mean, it's you're right. We've got a dwindling population, a low childbirth rate, and there is that argument. Richard, great to talk to you. Thank you very much for that. 0345 6060 973. Luke's in Orpington. Hello, Luke.
Hi, I've got two things to talk about. Firstly, we solve moths.
Oh, right, yes.
Friend who had bad moths.
So that was me signing off about immigration, lack of and need of, as opposed to too much of, on the whole. All right, so we're playing the Clive Bull phone-in jukebox. What else have we got next?
Well, I think a topic that's very much in the forefront of our minds is C10.
Oh, yeah.
And that is bread, brackets, sliced loaves, close brackets.
Oh, yes, it's a very important controversial topic of the day. Let's have a listen to what my opinion was about that.
345 60 60 973.
Thanks for all the messages coming in. Somebody's actually agreeing with Caleb about birds flying lower. Would you believe it? Andrea says, birds do fly lower or closer to my head, particularly crows, magpies and the very small birds. Even my daughter noticed it today while she sunbathed and I gardened. Maybe there is something in that after all. Lots of comments on bread as well. Let's talk to Richard in St. Helens. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Clive.
Morning.
Morning. Just want to put a call in favour of the traditional sliced loaf. You can't beat it. You can do anything with it. You have egg on toast, sardines on toast, beans on toast, toast and jam. I feel like the song Toast by the Street Band. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Just a little bit of toast.
Toast. Yeah, I do remember that.
And of course, I used to work, we talked about when I was in Germany before, I used to work just above the Naffy Bakery, and I used to arrive at work at 5:30 and they were already baking away, and the smell of freshly made bread is absolutely fantastic. But the one thing they didn't do well in Germany in the 1980s was decent bread. My wife was still in the west part of Germany, and she had a flat there, and we used to drive over on Saturday morning into Holland, into the Netherlands, to get our bread, because the German bread, just what it's like now, was absolutely terrible.
Yeah, I would think it would all be sort of pumpernickel and that sort of stuff.
Yeah, it was sort of black.
Yeah.
It was terrible stuff.
I know the stuff you mean. And what would you buy now, then? When you say a white loaf, you buy one of these ones that you can just stick in a toaster?
Well, sliced. I have a 50-50 loaf, which is a good compromise.
Ah, the one that's supposedly got all the goodness of wholemeal, but still looks a bit white.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's good. I used to buy that.
I do have a separate loaf for toast, a toasty one from a well-known bakery.
Right. And how much bread would you say you eat on an average day, then?
Well, 4 or 5 slices, probably.
Really? I wonder if that's the norm these days. There used to be an advert about how much bread you should eat. It was something like, was it six slices a day is the well-balanced way? Or it was something like that.
Yeah.
6 slices. And I always used to think, that's a lot of bread.
Yeah.
I certainly don't eat 6 slices nowadays. But as we've been hearing, it is quite unfashionable now to have a lot of bread and a lot of
carbs. But it's still a great comfort to tea and toast.
Oh, yeah.
For 7 months. And I was awake at this time in the morning. One of the healthcare assistants would say, do you want tea and toast?
Oh, yes.
And they'd make it for me and then stroke my hair whilst I ate it.
Tea and toast.
All on the NHS.
Fantastic. Yeah, you can't beat it. Toast, bit of butter, maybe some jam or some marmite or something.
Bit of jam.
And actually, it does. I get the health thing about brown bread and wholemeal and all of that, but the white bread tastes nicer, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
I'm afraid it does.
I'm afraid so. Richard, thank you very much for that. Andrew says, I haven't bought sliced bread for about 10 years. My blood pressure was a little high.
So that was me on bread and other topics with Clive Ball. We're playing, if you just joined us somehow, just flick through. The first bit was too boring. We're playing the Clive Bull jukebox, and we're outside the Baltic Market in the and it's getting very, very breezy indeed here. Okay, let's go for the next one.
So that'll be F6 cooperatives.
Ah, this is my views on the importance of the cooperative movement. Let's have a listen to that.
Travel differently.
This is LBC with Clive Bull. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Yes, and thanks for the comments. We'll look at some of those in a moment. Let's take a call. Here's Richard in St. Helens. Hello, Richard.
Hello there, Clive.
Hi. What do you think about all this?
Well, I had a bit of good news this week, with thousands of other people. I got £50 put into my bank account, and it was from the biggest mutual society in the country, which I started saving with in 1979. I started saving £50 a month, actually.
Oh, this is nationwide, is that right?
Well, you said it.
Yeah, yeah.
Give them a plug.
They were giving, existing customers got 50 quid.
Yeah.
Jolly good.
And it is good because, you know, twice they've done a referendum of the members to see whether they wanted to be demutualised and turned into a bank.
Yeah.
And twice, and it would have been about a windfall of about £8,000, I think. And, you know, twice, and I'm very proud of this, twice the members have rejected it.
Yes, that is interesting. I remember that. The first time, it was way back when all the building societies were turning themselves into banks.
Yeah. Now, I extended from that, you talked about what are the ones that the state should own. Is it state or is it private?
Yeah.
There's got to be a third way. Why can't we, as the community, own these organisations and companies,
mm-hmm.
elect the board members and have a say in it and share in the profits and keep it under local control? And if you're in Scunthorpe, then your biggest local employer. It is steelworks. It is of a vital national interest as well. Why can't the local people own the steelworks and they can borrow money on the open market as well? And when the good times are there, they get the returns of a profit. I mean, I worked for a company. The only time I've come close to this was in the 1980s. And we used to get a bonus every Christmas, depending on the profits of the company. So, for example, if the profit level was 13%, then we got a 13% bonus, which is, you know, so it's a month's, basically we had a month's extra salary at Christmas time, which paid for Christmas. And the whole thing was run as with the employees in charge.
Now, well, when you say...
into other areas?
Yeah, well, I mean, I like the idea in principle. My hesitation would just be who's actually running things, because you still need professionals doing a proper job.
You do.
And you know, a lot of, you know, average members of the public can't run a steel plant.
They can't, but they can make the major decisions when it comes to major investment or to sell off or whatever. Then those decisions would be based in the community and they would decide in the community's interest.
Would they, though? But that is my other hesitation. I love it in principle, but would the people of Scunthorpe, or, I mean, it's a national issue really, isn't it? Would enough people care about it? Because if you look at local communities and local politics, the turnouts for elections are generally terrible.
Yes, but that's because they actually don't have any control. They come to us every 4 or 5 years. Mm. I mean, round here, it's solid Labour. I'm nothing against Labour. They're good people on the whole. But they're solid Labour, and they just go away for the next 4 years and do what they want. They don't come back. We only hear from them at election time. They only get to ask for your involvement then, when they want your vote.
Right. So how would that work in terms of taking decisions then? Would you have a mass vote of the people of Scunthorpe or wherever it was?
Well, Clive, we live in the online world. We can make a decision instant. You can put a proposal over an email or a WhatsApp group, and you can have a mass democracy. It's so easy to do it now. This is the frustrating thing. In the past, it would mean you've all got to gather together in a hall and it's horrible winter's night, and then you get the real keen ones who take part. Nowadays, we can do it en masse over the internet.
Well, I agree. And I think maybe one day that will happen. I mean, that could be a really an improved version of democracy, as long as everybody knew roughly what they were doing. Yeah, I mean, we could right now, instead of recalling Parliament, tomorrow afternoon, we could all be going online or using our smartphones and voting as to what do you want to do with British Steel. Here's the three options. The whole country could vote, like it was on Big Brother or something.
And it's Back to the Future, Clive, because this is how the houses were built in the first place. The hospitals were built this way. They were all, you know, cooperative ventures. And this was the start, before we had even mass democracy, we actually had building societies. And you know, you've got natural monopolies of the gas, the water and the electric. I can decide on a different supplier. It makes no difference who I choose when I put my socket, or switch on the water tap. I can't say, I want Southwest Water to provide my water. I think they've got better water. I mean, it's a nonsense. Yes. They're natural monopolies, but they've got to come under local control.
Yeah, so would you go as far as renationalising? Is that, I mean, the Labour are certainly very hesitant about most of that at the moment, partly because it would cost a lot of money to buy some of these things back.
Mm.
But in a perfect world, would you like it to be like that?
I would, yeah, definitely.
And was it a terrible mistake what Thatcher did then?
Yes. In short, the way that she did it, well, she envisaged this property-owning democracy that we'd all be shareholders.
Mm.
But, of course, what people did is they took the short-term profits, thank you very much, pocketed the money, and went their merry way. And then it went into big private investment companies.
I remember.
And it goes abroad. So then they're not working for us. They're working for their you know, private equity groups.
I mean, and I think, to give Thatcher the benefit of the doubt, I think she probably did imagine that we'd all be shareholders, and initially all the shares were sold mostly to members of the public, and you buy a few and you all got your 100 quid profit or whatever. But in the end, they're all snapped up and bought by big, well, either often foreign governments and big conglomerates, which was not the idea at all.
It wasn't, no.
All right, well, great to talk to you, Richard. Let's see what others feel about this. Talking about ownership, really, nationalisation or private ownership. The industries like steel, for example, water, the railways.
So that was me on mutual societies and the cooperative movement. Okay, and the next one?
So that's E15, EU Mobility.
Ah, yes, this is me, a little bit of background to my own forays into Europe and the government's plans to let young people after Brexit to explore the continent again. Right, let's have a listen to that.
This is LBC with Clive Bull. Call 0345 6060 973. Text 84850. Alexa, send a comment to LBC.
Good morning, it's LBC. Do send a comment or call in. We're talking first off about this EU mobility scheme and more generally about the benefits or the pros and cons of living and working in another country. Let's talk to Richard in St. Helens. Hello, Richard.
Hello, Clive.
Hi.
Well, I did it. The first generation to go abroad to be with other young Europeans without killing them.
Yes.
I mean,
good point.
My grandfather's in the First War, my father's in the Second War and in the Cold War afterwards. And I was able to go abroad, had the opportunity to go abroad when I was 23. I stayed for nearly 4 years in Germany, West Germany to begin with, and then to West Berlin. I met my wife there. She was British, but she was working out there, having had an unhappy love affair back in the UK. Quite a few of the women had escaped that kind of relationship.
Oh, really?
And got abroad to have a new start.
Yes.
And the only thing I would object to the scheme is that it's not long enough. I mean, I was there for nearly 4 years. I think 3 or 4 years is about ideal, especially if you've got to learn a new language.
Well, that's true, isn't it? Yes. I mean, it's a start.
Of course.
But if it's working both ways, then you think maybe you could extend it. I mean, presumably that if you manage to get a job, then there are other ways of getting a visa and staying there longer anyway, which might be one way of doing it.
Well, they'll be working for international firms, presumably.
Yes.
So they'll have offices in different countries, so who knows where it may lead to.
And were you welcomed in Germany, do you think?
Oh, absolutely. Well, in West Berlin in particular, because they remembered the Berlin airlift, without going into the history, where the British and Americans had saved the West Berlins from being starved out and falling under the communism under Russia, Soviet Union. And in fact, in some restaurants, they wouldn't take your money if you were British.
Really?
You were that welcome, yeah.
So what year would this have been then? What kind
of
time?
I arrived in Germany at the end of 1980, but I was in Berlin between 1982 and 1984. So I escaped the first Thatcher recession. I mean, Britain was a pretty grim place in those days with mass unemployment and so forth. And Germany was wealthy. The nightlife was amazing. Just shopping was great. Everything about it was great. And I had a terrific time, and also mixed with wide variety of people from all different social classes, which was good for me as well, I think.
So when did the Berlin Wall come down?
89,
right, so you were just before that.
Yeah, about 5 years before. I mean, it seemed it was going to be there forever when I was there. We never believed it was going to come down. I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah, extraordinary. I've read a lot about that. I've never been to Berlin, and I would. The more I read about it, the more I think what a fascinating place it would be to visit now.
Mm. Oh, definitely, yeah. So I've been back since with the family. And
and did you pick up... I mean, I imagine... I can't speak German. I can't speak a single word of German. I imagine that's quite a difficult language to pick up.
Yeah, well, I spoke English. In fact, they would insist on you speaking English.
So they could learn English.
They wanted to practice their English. So yeah. It was a cool language to speak English in Germany in those days, because the Brits were seen as... Because we went there as, in, you know, 80 years ago as liberators more than conquerors. Whereas the Russians went in as definitely as conquerors.
And you're so right, it is a generational thing, isn't it? Because probably you were the first generation where it was doable, really, to even to travel to Europe and to spend a bit of time there. Previous to that, there were world wars in the way.
Yeah.
And also, it just wasn't very practical. There weren't 35 quid planes that you could get on, or a boat that was very easy to get around the world.
There weren't, but there's a wonderful... Some people did do it. There's a wonderful book by Laurie Lee, you know, the cider with Rosie.
Oh, yes.
And it's his autobiography. It's called As I Walked Out One Midsummer's Morning. It's about him leaving his sleepy Gloucestershire village, and he goes to London and has with some pretty rough fellas down there, and then he goes over to eventually ends up in Spain in the Spanish Civil War.
I don't think I've read that.
I recommend it. It's an amazing book.
So I will read that. Yeah, I think
it could be done.
I've heard of it. I've read about it. I don't think I've ever read that. And he ends up getting involved in the Spanish Civil War.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's... What's it called again? As I walked out
one midsummer's morning, I think it is. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, so you're in favour of this scheme overall, are you?
I think it's a great scheme, yeah. Everyone should have a period away from the country. It broadens your outlook and you make new friends. And in my case, and in many other cases, find a spouse for life.
There we are. Change your life.
Yeah.
Great to talk to you, Richard. Thank you very much. 0345 6060973. Let's have a quick look at some of the messages. And this one says, Clive, I've just tuned in to LBC here in Berlin to hear your caller talking about living here and about one of my favourite books, which is presumably the Laurie Lee book we were talking about. That's from Twist Freeman. Thank you, Twist. And one more for now, and then we'll go back to some calls.
Okay, we're playing Clive or Jukebox. We've got one more to go.
Yes, the final one is E2, Mental Health A&Es.
This is the one that, as we record this, was the night before. This is a new plan for the government to have an A&E sort of queue for people with mental illness, as opposed to having to queue up with the people with physical injuries at your local A&E of a Saturday night or whenever.
For that reason... Richard in St. Helens. Hello, Richard.
Hi, Clive.
Hi.
Mental health.
Yes.
Emergency. Yeah, good idea. I think that anything that gets people out of an immediate crisis and into some help is obviously a good thing. But if I can just make a point about it's not necessarily the immediate crisis that needs to be looked at, it's the long-term care and then integrating back into the community. And with myself, I've been sectioned several times. The last time under Section 3, I don't know whether you're familiar with the Mental Health Act. This is
not
where
really.
They can carry out medication against your will. And they wanted to carry out ECT, electroconvulsive therapy. They put electrodes through your brain, basically.
Right.
Which I was resistant to, but it worked as a treat for me. I had 12 sessions of that.
Really?
I was in hospital for 7 months, 6 months right. initially.
And it worked.
Under the Act. But the point was that when I was discharged, I wasn't just left to go back home as I had been before with a bit of follow-up from social services. This time I had proper recovery teams, and they accompanied me to community events. There's a wonderful thing in St. Helens, if I can mention it, called the Come Together Hub.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mainly drug addicts and recovery addicts and alcohol. They're very interesting people, Clive. I've learned a lot.
I'm sure.
From them. But the point was I went there with, first of all, with a worker to give me the confidence to go into the meeting and then get involved with them. And they've been absolutely fantastic. And I'm out every day with various things. I've joined other groups as well. We're doing a retreat into the Lake District next month. We're doing a comedy course. Going to put on a sketch at a Liverpool comedy club. And it's just been an absolute game changer for me. So it's the long term, you know, you get an immediate crisis and that's got to be dealt with.
Well, I wanted to ask about that, because I'm sure some people will be reading this about mental health A&Es and thinking, well, how often is there an actual emergency for mental health? People don't look at it in that way. Do you think there will be a big demand for a mental health A&E?
Well, all I can say, I mean, I don't class myself as an expert, but all I can say from my own experience is that I was obviously, I don't remember this, but I was in an immediate crisis and was sectioned.
Right.
And was taken in immediately because I was a danger to myself, not to others.
Yeah.
And that was an immediate crisis and that had to be dealt with for my own protection.
Yeah. And presumably these A&Es, these mental health A&Es, will have a different kind of staff there. They'll have trained people who can deal with mental health emergencies rather than getting you to stand with the people with a broken arm and the nail through their foot and all of that are sitting there waiting for 12 hours. I mean, it seems like a good idea in principle if they've got the people to do it.
I mean, we've got to look at the fact that suicide is the biggest killer of men under 45.
Yes.
And the majority of those are through depression.
Yes.
So we can't say there isn't a crisis.
Oh, no.
It's often people who the authorities are missing out on. I mean, I was very lucky that I had a very proactive GP. And my brother and son and everybody who referred me and got involved with me just to stop me doing myself harm. And now I'm completely, well, I'm recovered and I'm just enjoying life again.
Well, I'm really pleased to hear that. And you sound like somebody who would have benefited from a setup like this as well. You're quite right. There's a huge problem, mental health problem in this country, especially a lot of younger people at the moment as well, who don't have anywhere to turn to. And the provision, mental health provision within the NHS is poor. And the only problem, I think, as somebody pointed out earlier on with this mental health A&E idea, is have they got the people? Will they be able to staff it? Richard, thank you very much.
Well, there we are. We played Clive Bull Jukebox. We're up to date. This is not, by the way, a comprehensive selection. There are others that I haven't included. I'm a regular guest on his show. I'm proud to be so. I must also give a mention to another great favourite of mine on LBC, which precedes Clive Bull the Weekend, Nick Abbott. I know you're a fan of his as well.
Yes, very good, very good. Especially the weather forecasts.
Yes, he begins every Friday night show, 10 o'clock, with weather forecasts, including especially a visit to Glasgow. And he won't have it that Glasgow is going to be anything other than rain-soaked every day for the rest of your life. Who else do you like on radio, on the speech radio?
James O'Brien is very good. But I also,
LBC again.
Indeed. But I also enjoy Ian Dale on evenings of LBC. No, he's really good. And between 8 and 9, he has a thing called Cross Question, which is where he has guests in the studio, politicians, journalists, It's basically a question time type format, but it's really good, and he's an excellent broadcaster, so yeah. He's definitely one of my favourites.
Yeah.
And then Saturday morning...
Because he's from a conservative point of view, and of course James O'Brien is very much of your guardian... Left,
yes.
A good mixture of people, don't they?
Yeah, but Ian Dale is a conservative in the kind of Theresa May style.
Yeah, sort of like a One Nation.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Yeah. And then we have Matt Fry, the Channel 4 broadcaster, on a Saturday morning, which is brilliantly superb programme.
So we've got some good speech radio. The music radio we'll have to leave to another time. And another rant about the state of music radio, although I have touched on boom radio in a previous podcast. So there we are. I hope you enjoyed today's foray into my nocturnal radio emissions. And we've got a nice sunny day now. The wind's dropped a little bit. And hope you enjoyed, or fascinated, or perturbed, dismayed, or ridiculed some of the preceding remarks. And just in case... you're wondering where I'm coming from, don't forget I have had some bolts through my brain on several occasions, so who knows what it's done to my reasoning. You may make your own judgment on that. But from the sunny and cosmopolitan Baltic Market in Liverpool, this is Keith and myself, Richard Rudin, wishing you farewell. Thanks for listening. Don't forget, if you enjoy the podcast, to like, share and subscribe. And don't forget that the podcast is now also available on Alexa. Just say to Alexa, I won't say her word, no, I've said it now, haven't I? People listening over the speakers, you'll be already listening now. Play Richard Rudin podcast. Now, you have to say it really clearly, otherwise you'll get a Richard Rubin or Richard Herring.
Yes, I've noticed that.
Yeah. So you have to say really clearly, Richard Rudin podcast. If you do that, then you'll get the latest episode. You can also go back, listen to previous episodes, or follow the links to the Audio Boom site or to SoundCloud. One way or the other, we're there. We're in the business. We're in Spotify, we're on Apple, and we're going to be on YouTube soon if I can possibly sort it out. Thanks for listening. Take care. Speak to you soon on the Richard Rudin podcast.